Normally, colleges create football teams, but here is the story of a football coach who created a college. It's an online school in Charlotte, North Carolina, called College of Faith. From member station WFAE, Michael Tomsek reports.
1, 2, 3, Tomsek!
College of Faith football players believed they were finally going to win a game, or at least score some points. Frustration mounted as their turnovers piled up. They lost to Limestone College in South Carolina 45-0. Limestone College does have advantages, says College of Faith coach Del Richardson.
They have a campus, they have weight room, they have a full-time staff, you know, they have full-time coaches. We don't. It is what it is. You know, we do the best we can with what we got.
What College of Faith Charlotte has is about 60 students, mostly athletes. The closest thing it has to a campus is a small room in a rundown church. Students plop their football pads in a corner when they come here to go over Bible lessons and game tape. The games can be tough to watch. The football team hasn't scored a single point against another four-year college. It was held to negative 100 total yards in a game this season, an NCAA record. The coach created the school last year. Richardson has worked at high schools in Charlotte and wanted to help young men improve their lives. College of Faith offers online degrees in ministry and sports ministry. It's an outgrowth of another College of Faith, an online school in Arkansas, created by Sherwin Thomas.
You have to be honest, most of them are coming to the school because it's an opportunity for them to live their dream and to play college sports. But for us, bottom line is we want you to get a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Thomas helps create the online Bible classes, and the schools operate independently. There's another one in Florida. The degrees are not accredited. College of Faith Charlotte has a religious exemption that allows it to operate without a state license. On this day in Charlotte, about 25 players practice on a field tucked behind an abandoned middle school with a busted sign.
Whatever rule you make it consistent, all right? Yes,
sir. Richardson instructs the players and the other coaches, who work jobs as bouncers, mechanics, and chefs. Richardson says no one makes a salary here. He works full-time at a high school as a teacher assistant. When practice ends, a religious lesson begins. First-year player Will Bowling leads this one.
Forget all material things. And always lean on God for everything.
Most students pay $500 a year. The college also gets paid to play football games. It's a common part of college football for some schools to pay smaller ones for an easy win. Davidson College athletic director Jim Murphy says his school paid College of Faith a few thousand dollars for a game this season.
The more we heard about the College of Faith, though, obviously a little bit different model, I felt like this was an opportunity to help a local football team get its legs.
Some of the players say they couldn't afford to play college football anywhere else. For Desmond Smith, this is a dream.
I love the program, and I love to be around my teammates, man.
And Will Bowling says he wants to be a preacher once he graduates.
I always want to reach out to people, help out the community any way I can. I'm a helpful person. I just want to help people get saved so they can go upstairs with God.
Some of the players have had trouble with previous schools or the law. Coach Richardson says the school has a lot of what he calls second-chance guys.
That's why we work so hard, because we want to equip them where they can better support their families, but also become good people through the Word of God.
Several players describe Richardson as a father figure. He's given almost all of them their only shot at college football. For NPR News, I'm Michael Tomczyk in Charlotte.
Chicago's Catholic Archdiocese released thousands of pages of documents today detailing allegations of sexual abuse by 36 priests. It is the second group of such documents the church in Chicago has made public this year, and it fulfills a pledge by Chicago Cardinal Francis George to do so before he retires in 2 weeks. From Chicago, NPR's David Shaper reports.
The newly released documents contain the stories of victims of clergy sexual abuse dating back to the 1950s and continuing into the 1990s. They show how 36 priests in the Chicago Archdiocese took advantage of children in their parishes and the trust of their parents. And the documents show how higher-ups in the Chicago Archdiocese, bishops, vicars, and even cardinals, often mishandled the allegations, sometimes ignoring the accusers, often just shuttling predatory priests to other parishes where they could abuse again.
We acknowledge that what has happened it's horrible.
Jan Slattery is director of the Chicago Archdiocese Office for the Protection of Children and Youth, and she says the church cannot change the sins of the past.
All we can do now is work to rebuild trust, and we're doing that through what we hope is with you, honest dialogue. We're trying to establish the truth so that we can begin to move forward in healing and reconciliation.
Slattery says none of the 36 priests named in the documents released today on the Archdiocese website remain in active ministry. This release follows a similar document dropped back in January. Those files detailed substantiated sexual abuse allegations against 30 other priests. And the release today is timed 2 weeks before the retirement of Cardinal Francis George, who wanted this done on his watch before the installation of the new archbishop, Blaise Supich. In a statement, Cardinal George says this shows the church's commitment to transparency. But that's not how the survivors of sexual abuse by priests see it.
They're feeling like they are being duped and deceived.
That's Jeff Anderson, who represents dozens of victims of clergy sex abuse in Chicago and other Catholic dioceses around the country. He says any disclosure of past incidents of abuse and the cover-ups that followed is an improvement over secrecy.
But in this case, because we were not included in the process and were not allowed to scrutinize these files the way we were the earlier release, we are very suspicious of this process. We see it as an inside job.
Anderson and other advocates for the survivors of abuse by priests say they have no way of knowing if the Archdiocese is being fully honest and transparent because they don't know what, if anything, is being left out of these files. He says it's critical to release all information about the abuse and cover-ups of the past, so it's not repeated in the future. David Schaefer, NPR News, Chicago.